Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. For mixed media artist Naomi Wanjiko Gakunga, it all begins with her family's tradition of making Kenyan basketry. But the Kenyan artist has used these traditional weaving techniques to create an entirely new body of contemporary work, ranging from sculpture, textiles, recycled art, and jewelry, many of which the examples of that work is on display at 108 Contemporary in a show titled Cat's Cradle, Naomi Wanjiko Gakunga, which opened at the beginning of May and continues through June 29th. In addition to the weaving techniques, which she has adapted with stainless steel wires, Wanjiko's work uses mabadi, galvanized steel sheets, which she quilts into huge wall hangings and sculptural pieces, or piecing together recycled materials or fabrics, adhering to jukwali, a Swahili expression meaning under the hot sun, which refers to creating new work out of items that have been discarded under the hot sun. Wanjiko studied at the University of Nairobi and UCLA, and she has shown her work throughout the United States and has been featured in exhibits and art fairs in the UK, Canada, Abu Dhabi Art Fair, Japan, France, and Brazil, among other countries. Again, her work is on display at 108 Contemporary through June 29th, and she joins me today by phone from her home in San Antonio. Naomi Wanjiko Gakunga, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
When I look at your artwork, the art of weaving seems to be at the heart of nearly everything you create. Now, I know there are some pieces that don't involve weaving, but I understand that your grandmother was a traditional weaver. How did that influence you in your own work?
Well, my grandmother was a traditional weaver. She and her friends would weave baskets as I was growing up. And what is interesting is that they did their weaving. They started from scratch. They would make their own strings. They would chew a certain plant called mohio. And with these plants, they chewed and then they twisted the yarns, and then they would begin the weaving, the traditional Kikuyu basket.
May I stop you? Did you say they chewed the material?
Yes, they chewed the yarn. They chewed the yarn from the bark of the tree to soften it so that they would then twist it.
Ah, I see. How interesting. And so this was the traditional basket making. So was this at the heart of your work from the beginning, or was this something that sort of clicked as you're pursuing your art career?
No, I always did, because then I grew up from a very early age watching these women and weaving with them. I carried that with me, not really knowing what a wealth of techniques I had with me. And so at graduate school, when I started putting together everything that I knew of myself, weaving came out very strongly, and so I started incorporating weaving with whatever other techniques and materials that I used to create my art.
Mm-hmm. When something has been with you that long, I think sometimes you can look at that craft in a certain way and say, okay, this won't translate to my particular art. Did you feel like from the very beginning this was something that you could move into different areas as you have?
No, from the beginning, I did not even look at it, really. I did not realize that I had that and that it was something that I could intertwine in my creative journey. It's only later when I start to work with the string, because the string really has been the thread that has continued through with my creativity. That string that I saw them chew and twist and then weave the baskets with is really the underlying theme for the art that I do. If you go to my show at the 108 Contemporary, you'll see kind of three different bodies of work. There's the sheet metal, there's the woven basket, and then there's some pieces that are done with fabric. But what connects all those materials and techniques is the thread, the string, whether I'm using the string or whether I'm using the stainless steel wire. And so the string, which then starts to translate into weaving, is really becomes the core of what I do.
Now, when did you work into the metal work? And you mentioned the steel wire that's the threading material for your metal work. How did you come about doing that?
Two reasons. One, in 2010, the art piece here in downtown San Antonio gave me a travel grant to go back to Kenya and look at the weave, the juakali, which is the people who collect this stuff and make art out of that in Kenya. And so I traveled back and spent time with these people and watched and observed. Of course, I grew up with them, but going back after so many years, I could see them weaving and twisting and doing all kinds of things with recycled materials. The other reason that I kind of gradually moved to the stainless steel wire. My husband is an orthodontist. And so in his practice, I come across all these wires that are very malleable and very thin. And to me, I started interpreting them as the strings that I grew up seeing my grandmother chew. So those two combined, and I started working with the stainless steel wire.
Wow. The things that connect the braces is the material that you use to create your sculptures, which that's really interesting. And you're using a lot of wire, especially on those large metal pieces.
Yes, I use a lot of wire. My studio is full of all kinds of gauge wire because being a Kikuyu woman, I had never really used wire or metal or those kind of materials. So for me, it's been a huge learning process, from knowing what gauge wire to use and how to manipulate it and all the tools. I spend half my days I spent at the Home Depot, the local department, the local store here, just going through it and teaching myself what really I can bring back to my studio and create with.
The other thing that really strikes me about your metal work, especially, and even in the recycled metal work, is your use of texture. The textures on the sheet metal, for example, they're just really beautiful. How do you go about creating that?
Well, one of the things is that I'm motivated by the qualities that are inherent in all the materials that I use. And so particularly with the metal, I deliberately saturate the metal, the sheet metal, in water. And this process, really, once I submerge them into the water, they reveal on their surfaces, I see multiple layers. And the transformation edge in these metals really begin to tell me a story. I just got some of the metals out of the water last week before the rains came, and I'm looking at the metal, and there are little twigs and leaves and all kinds of things that have happened in the winter in Texas, and they are all part of the story of this sheet metal as I bring it indoors and start creating my art.
So foreign materials that sort of get into the water and get on the metal actually sort of help create designs in
a way. They create design. They create very deep levels of textures.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk about some of the pieces that are in the show, a couple that really catch your eye. And before we talk about the pieces, we should talk about the sheet metal itself. Mm-hmm. The sheet metal has a great deal of significance to you because the galvanized steel sheets that you use for a lot of the metalworks and sort of sculptural hangings has this connection to Kenya as well. Can you explain that?
Yes, the sheet metal, which we call in Swahili. Swahili is the language spoken in Kenya, and we call sheet metal mabati. And my work using the galvanized sheet metal really pays tribute to the spirit of the Mabati women group movement. This was a women's empowering movement immediately post-independence in central Kenya. The goal was to work together to meet the very basic need of permanent roofing using the sheet metal for their homes. And the outcome was the emergence of women's consciousness in central Kenya. What really makes it exciting is that I am a third-generation child of these women. And therefore, the materials that I use, the galvanized sheet metal, connect me to the post-Mabati women generation and to that of the earlier generation. When you look at my sheet metal, I stitch, I weave, I crochet. And really, these are the extensions of the Mabati women's hands at work.
Well, I assume that Mabati is, the galvanized sheet metal, is sort of a building blocks for basic shelter, for roofing material, and it's probably used in all sorts of ways.
Yes, it's mainly used for roofing materials and walls. But for these women, particularly for these women, they use it for harvesting water from the new roofs that they created. Prior to using galvanized sheet metal, they used thatched grass, and this meant they had to keep repairing their roofs, and they could not collect water off their roofs. So the material, this galvanized sheet metal, then changed, transformed their lives. They had more time now to go into the fields and plant coffee, plant tea, cash crop, and start making creating an economy for themselves. And so, yes, the galvanized sheet metal, really, you may just look at it as a material that covers the roofs or the walls of a home, but it has a deeper significance.
I'm always struck by when I hear stories about objects that we would take for granted here in the first world, what a difference it can make to somebody in a rural area that is maybe a subsistence farmer or living off the land, if you will, what that object means to them. I mean, you're talking about hours of labor working on thatch roofs, or if you're not collecting water, you're traveling to get water. And that simple item, you know, it cuts hours off of a daily existence.
Yes, for these women in the Kenya in the 60s, galvanized sheet metals on their roofs was really a turning point for them. Because as you said, they used to walk 10, 15 miles just to bring 4 gallons of water back home. And 4 gallons of water really is not enough for any household. And so they would do this twice a day, morning at 6 o'clock and in the evening again at 6 o'clock. A lot of time and energy spent in just bringing water home. So those who really afforded to have their sheet metal roofs saved enough time to then move on, and they became more creative with their cash crops. And this kind of is the big divide in Kenya. This is where some families are then able to educate their children, and some families are left behind because the woman of the home did not move on and join these groups and save money and have sheet metal roofs on them, and therefore plant coffee, plant tea, get some money into the household. Then there are families that did not go to the schools. The children were left behind. It really created a huge impact on the society.
Yeah, it's stepping stones. When you have more of your time is spent farming, you're bringing more money into the household. That means children are less likely to have to work and they can go to school, and it's just one thing after another. I think that is a really cool sort of story behind your artwork. But let's talk about your artwork if we could, because it's some beautiful, beautiful pieces. And one of the first one, speaking of waters, is I believe it's called Kigu or a Rushing Waters.
Yes, the Rushing Waters, Kigu, Rushing Waters.
And this, again, is just sheet metals in vertical strips, and it creates sort of a waterfall pattern. Some, they're coiled at the end. Others are laid out on the floor, but it's basically a waterfall pattern of this textured sheet metal.
Yes, that's one of my later pieces that I've done. I worked on this year. And again, I still keep communicating on the issues of water, because even though I talk about women having roofed their homes, there's still a huge, huge need for water in Africa. And so the rolling sheet metals that I have really is just a very strong, powerful piece that just talks about what water can do. I know I have been to Niagara Falls, I've been to the Victoria Falls in Africa, and every time I see the falls, that power is so powerful. You just cannot ignore the falls. And I'm just excited that I'm able to communicate such power with just a very, if you want to call it, mundane material, like the sheet metal.
And it's a very simple form, too. It's a very simple form.
It's very simple. When I did talk to the curator and I said I have this piece, which is like seven, whatever feet, huge piece, I remember saying, oh, my God, how are we going to ship it over? And I said, don't worry. Because it rolls into a very simple, tiny little box. So it's just one of those pieces that I love. It's very, very creative. I'm just fascinated when objects like sheet metal begin to tell their stories. Like when you look at that piece, it's really telling you this is a waterfall. And just for me to be able to bring out that in my creativity, it's very exciting.
Well, the textures on the strips, I mean, it's almost like the textures you'll see when you look at falling water. And even though it's very, very static, it's like a snapshot, really, in many ways. So it's quite a nice piece. The other piece that really captured my attention when I first saw it was this wonderful cloud, architectural cloud form, which you call Folklore Code 4. This is the fourth in the series, and I've seen the others on your website. These are these wonderful steel, stainless steel mesh, cloud-like forms with, on the edge of each of these forms, you have these wonderfully vibrantly colored fabric rims around them. And it's just a gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous design.
Yes, I love the folklorico series. That really I always say that my artistic expression is very much shaped by my environment. So when I'm growing up in Kenya, I see the string. When I move to South Texas, I see the performance of the folklorico dance.
Yes.
And the dance and its accompanying music, it's usually performed in downtown San Antonio at the market, the Mercado. And I always sit out there and I watch those dancers dance. And as a visual artist, my spontaneous reaction to the folkloric dance is always to the brilliant visual display of the costumes. The movement of the dancers fuses the colorful costumes. And to me, it just creates such a visual spectacle. Their outfits keep flowing, dance after dance after dance. I always go out there, I sit 2 hours, 3 hours just watching them. And I come back with photographs, and I always felt these photographs are not even doing justice to what I see when I watch this beautiful dance. And this is what brought about the series of the folklorico dance, where I really just want you to see the flow. It's all stainless steel wire, crocheted stainless steel wire, embroidered with very colorful fabrics. And all I want the viewer to see is the dance. The dancer is not there, the thickness of the fabric is not there, but the sheer dance of the wire, the see-through, the transparency wire, that I just find it very, very fascinating.
Well, in fact, now that you've mentioned that, I was thinking of them as cloud forms, and now that I know this backstory, it is obvious that this is the hems of the skirts as they're flowing in motion through the dancing. And of course, you've captured it wonderfully.
Thank you.
Yeah, sometimes it just takes a little clue to understand what's going on, and in that case, from an abstract viewpoint, it's really vibrant. But when you think of the folklorico dancers, then you say, oh, of course, this is what you're depicting here. My guest today is Naomi Wanjiko Gakunga, a mixed media artist who is being featured at 108 Contemporary. Cat's Cradle is on display through June 29th, and she's our guest today on Studio. It's also joining us from her studio in San Antonio. Let's talk about some of the other art that is in the show. One, we see a number of pieces of recycled art. To gather is this wonderful wall hanging of discarded tin cans, again, stitched up with these metal wires. And once again, the textures on these tin cans sort of tell its own story.
Yes, my tin cans actually were the earlier. That was my learning process before I started using the sheet metal. So I learned a lot through the tin cans. Because, again, I get my expression really from my environment, I have developed an awareness of what surrounds me, what I see, what I hear. What I smell becomes a mental sketching board for my ideas. Sometimes what I'm aware of is simply a thought, an impulse, a vibration of a falling rock. So in this situation, I had visited my friend in the south side of the city of San Antonio, where they do not recycle, and I found they had trashed their cans in a big kind of a pothole. And I went in there and I looked at it and I was just in awe what I saw. Some beautiful cans that had changed from the golds to the ochres to the browns. And I went back indoors and I said to her, can I borrow your cans? And she said, oh my God, would you be borrowing my cans for? Take them. So I put them in a trash bag. I brought them to my garage and they were there for over 6 months. Eventually, when I came to look at them, they had decomposed. And so I thought, well, then I should just be able to recreate my own cans. And this is where I started asking my friends to bring me cans, and I would leave them outside for a week, 2 weeks, and just the fascinating change of the colors, bring them indoors, and then I started, again, combining them with the stainless steel wire to create the beautiful sculptural wall hanging that you're talking about, that particular piece, which I call The Gathering, which really is just a metaphor of my bringing together all the cans and asking my friends to gather cans and bring them in to me for me to be creative with them.
There's another piece that I saw on your website that's not in the show, in which you're using dyes, I believe, because there's one where you've dyed them a brilliant aqua color, which just is a gorgeous piece.
Yes, again, I come from a background of, I remember I just told you the women would chew the yarn and then twist it, they would introduce dyeing into their yarns. That's how they make very beautiful, colorful baskets. And so I've really been dyeing for many, many years. I dye fabric, I dye all kinds of things. So when I started working with the sheet metal, I thought, I wonder how it would take color. So it's really experimental. And this summer, I'm going to be working a lot more with color on the sheet metal. And I bring it out, and once it has texture, once it's been out there and the elements have kind of taken their toll on the sheet metal, I'm then able to introduce color. Very simple dyeing process, very similar to what I do with dyeing fabrics. And it's almost, even for me as an artist, I'm fascinated when the dye touches the sheet metal. It will take in some parts, depending on the corrosion. It will not take in some areas. And it just looks like a tie-dye piece of fabric before I bring it indoors and start creating. I start taking it through the artistic experience. So it's really very experimental, and that's why it's so exciting for me to just flow with it and have my art surprise me, and sometimes tickle me, and sometimes disappoint me, depending on the weather, depending on whether it rained and cleaned all my textures. So it's just a very fascinating journey for me as a creative person.
Now, there were some pieces, some of the sheet metal pieces, these would be like the quilt-like fabrics that are they're metal pieces, but they have a quilt-like texture to them and sort of a quilting technique. Like a continuity is one piece where you have this. Most of it is, you know, various shades of brown and the sort of the weathering process, but there are some bright green panels in there. And I'm wondering if that was a dye or was that just the way the metal aged and weathered?
No, actually, that was dye. And again, the dye takes where it takes. So in that particular piece, it took in some areas and some areas it not take in. So it just ends up being a very beautiful panorama of greens and, you know, and then the rest of the colors are just the natural color of the sheet metal as it ages outdoors.
I was also struck by the there's a bit of humor in your work, too. There's another piece along of these quilted metal sheet metal pieces. One's called Entrances, and you have these variety of hinges that are functioning as along with the stainless steel wire as the quilting material. And I thought that was really a cute piece. How did that come about?
Yeah, that's a very interesting piece. Entrances. I have always wanted. I'm very fascinated by entrances. As a human being, it's almost like we're obsessed with entrances. I come into my house and I walk through the garage door. That's the first entrance. Beyond the garage door, there's another entrance. Before I get into my kitchen, there's another entrance. By the time I get to the other side of my home, I have gone through 5-6 entrances. And I'm thinking, why are we so obsessed with entrances? Why are there so many, you know, kind of places to let you in and let you out? And that really was the whole idea on entrances. And so that particular piece has hinges. It kind of have like this entrance and that entrance. And how do we make choices and which way to go? Kind of even a very spiritual approach to whatever we are told happens after life. Which gate do we go through? Which one don't we want to go through? You know, just a very provoking piece that I did, the one you're calling the entrances.
My guest today is Naomi Wanjiku-Gakunga, a mixed media artist. Her work is on display at 108 Contemporary through June 29th in a show called Cat's Cradle. She's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. I would like to talk about some of your textile work, which is just really incredibly gorgeous. Two pieces in particular, Red Land and Many Rivers to Cross, which just really gorgeous textile work. Again, patchwork and the very intricate sewing work, and of course, in the case of Many Rivers to Cross, you're using a lot of different materials as well.
Yes, I am originally a textile artist. Even when I went to UCLA and did my graduate work at UCLA, it was in textile art. So that's why I'm very, very comfortable working with textiles. And these two pieces that you talk about, I want to talk about the Many Rivers to Cross. That particular piece is really, I'm really borrowing from the traditional string that I talked about. Like I said earlier, the string is really very important in the life of a Kikuyu woman. From the day the child is born, we tie the umbilical cord with a string. When the woman eventually departs from this world, we lower the body gently using strings. And that particular piece, the Many Rivers to Cross, has a lot of strings going back and forth. It is probably one of the pieces where I really express the string. Because as a Kikuyu woman, the string is constructed, deconstructed, and resurrected in multiple ways. And that is really the expression on that piece. I do add onto that piece against stainless steel wire, which is really what makes that piece very contemporary. It's the use of wire and beads, just again, very, very Kikuyu tradition of using beads. It's actually very African to use beads. We use beads everywhere, in our clothes, in our baskets. Beads are very, very common.
I was going to say, is it interesting when I viewed that from a distance? I knew it wasn't Wayne Thiebaud, but it had that Wayne Thiebaud sort of color palette. It was really, really interesting when you think of Wayne Thiebaud's landscapes. You know, he'll do riverscapes and waterscapes and flowing rivers. And I was really struck by that. It sort of was a connection for me. But the rivers theme comes through really strong in this piece.
Thank you. It's again, rivers and water seems to be a recurring theme in most of my pieces in that show. The red piece really is a quilt. I love quilting. It's obviously not the traditional quilt as the classical quilt that people would think about, but just putting together those panels and being able to introduce the stainless steel wire kind of gives that particular red piece a very easy feel. I call it the red land because where I come from, the soil is very red. I took some friends of mine to Kenya last summer, and they were amazed to see red, deep red soil. They've never forgotten. It was raining and muddy. I took them back to this village where my grandmother grew up. I have a little project there that we do. We run kids. We have a project for children to just, you know, assist them in their education. I took them there, and the red earth, which is the inspiration for this piece, is just fascinating when you've never seen it. It's just beautiful, beautiful red. That, when you combine with the greens and the blues in that particular environment, it fascinates me. It's beautiful. And so that is really the inspiration for the red piece.
Well, little you know that about 100 miles west of here in Oklahoma, we have that equally red earth as a part of our landscape, so it makes sense that it's being on display here. The name of the show is Cat's Cradle. It's on display through June 29th. My guest today is Naomi Wanjiko Kakunga. And now, this show came here after you were at the London Art Fair, which I, from what I can read, sounded like it was a great success for you. What's next?
Well, it's I have a show coming up in November. In September, I'm going to be back in London, and then in November, I am going to be at the Jewish University in Los Angeles, where I will be showing with a group of four other women, September through December. So it's a busy summer for me. I'm glad it's raining a little bit, and I hope the summers will not be as tough as they usually are, because I'm going to have to be outdoors a lot for many, many hours.
All right. Well, we wish you great success with your work, and I hope a lot of people come down to 108 Contemporary in the final month of this exhibit. Naomi, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Kenyan mixed media artist Naomi Wanjiko Gokunga speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. Her work is on display at 108 Contemporary in the Brady District in the exhibit Cat's Cradle, Naomi Wanjiko Gokunga, which is on display through June 29th. For gallery hours and more information and to view some of her artwork, go to 108contemporary.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.